You're listening to the Mark and Russia broadcast number 84, and I'm Mark.
You're listening to the Mark and Russia podcast, broadcasting from the belly of the bear in Chelyabinsk, Russia. Kick back and enjoy the show. Don't be a pussy.
Today I'm going to take a break. I'll take a break just for this week from the My Life in Russia stories. And I'm going to address the reaction to my last podcast. It seems that some were offended by parts of it. So just as the cartoon South Park manages to not apologize, but rather offends everyone equally, I thought I'd do the same this week. The name of this week's broadcast is Earth Day 1970, What a Bunch of Crap. Earth Day was this past week, so I thought I would celebrate it in a Mark and Russia manner. Well, last week, my podcast was all about Subotnik in Russia. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can go back to that episode. I'm sure as heck not going to repeat everything again. Anyhow, I think that I pissed off some people a little because it seemed more, maybe that I was making fun of the action of cleaning rather than the person who started this holiday and to whom it was dedicated to for the years of the USSR. And by that, I mean Vladimir Lenin. Anyhow, I said that the concept of cleaning up your surroundings was a good idea, but perhaps it would seem better to rename it, to rebrand it, so to speak. I won't apologize for anything I said about Lenin. He is just a POS, in my opinion. And if you don't know what that means, go back to last week. I define it. And not just my opinion, almost everyone else's opinion elsewhere in the world. I was thinking about pushing, well, as if I have the pull for this, pushing that it be called Earth Day or Earth Week, like an event practiced in the Western world since 1970. This is all about cleaning up the environment and doing it on a volunteer basis. It also happens at the same time as Subotnik. Then I started to think a bit about Earth Day, and I realized what a bunch of crap event it was, and decided instead to mock the Western world for celebrating this holiday. Just for the record, the first Earth Day was in 1970, and I do remember it quite well. I was 13 years old at the time, and back then, in my town, we did not have a separate junior high and high school, but instead we just had a high school which had classes 7 through 12. I was a 7th grader, but I was able to witness history being made by the 11th and 12th graders that year. Anyhow, the U.S. had been going through a pretty rough patch with the war in Vietnam still going on, and lots of protesters. Young people were fairly idealistic at that time. Now, I'm going to say right off the bat that the reasons were fairly good for that first Earth Day. Pollution seemed to be everywhere, and people's habits were not too cool. Back then, people thought nothing about just throwing garbage out the car window when they were driving, although the problem was also widespread into air pollution and water pollution. You know, back in the 1970s, most rivers in America were pretty nasty and polluted, with major factories just dumping pollution into the water, ground, and the air. In 1969, the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland caught fire because of all the pollution, all of the oil residue on top of the water. And it wasn't the first time that it had happened, by the way. But this time it made it onto the cover of Time magazine and became a symbol for the new environmental movement and for the first Earth Day. Okay, you can just Google Earth Day 1970 and find out lots of info, but I prefer to offer you some of my own in a mocking tribute to the organizers of this movement. Go to almost any site about Earth Day and you'll learn that the founder was Wisconsin Senator Gaylord Nelson. What a name. I would hate my parents if they named me Gaylord, and I certainly wouldn't use it as an adult. I would get it changed. Although, who knows, maybe today it would be cool for many. Anyhow, Senator Gaylord Nelson, if you look it up, they'll give you a whole cornucopia of reasons why he decided to do this. However, if you're diligent in looking, you'll discover that the good senator was a co-founder. Co-founder would imply that there were others. Well, it turns out the good things come to those who wait or to those who dig. The fact that there was a co-founder is almost lost to history because the mainstream media, who are darlings of the environmentalists, decided to try to bury this information. But Mark and Rush has dug it out for you. What I'd like to do now is to invite you to take a tour with me concerning the losers and weirdos who were part of this movement at the beginning. The other co-founder that I mentioned is a man named Ira Einhorn. The radical environmentalists try to pretend that he didn't exist, kind of the same way that people just kind of poof, disappear from communist books when they fell out of favor. Let's talk about Ira for a moment. A few years after his efforts to save the world, Ira had a breakup with his girlfriend. Or it might be more accurate if I said that she broke up with him. Well, he lured her back to his apartment for some reason and somehow. Then he killed her there in a crime of passion. But being the good environmentalist, he decided to compost her body to be nice to Mother Earth. It took 7 months for the police to discover what had happened. The smells that his neighbor reported probably helped with that. Just days before his murder trial was set to begin, Einhorn, or as he preferred to be called, the Unicorn, fled to Europe. And frankly, somebody that's been charged with murder, I've never heard of them being on the loose, meaning to be able to escape anywhere. But he fled to Europe, where he enjoyed a 17-year holiday from the law, avoiding extradition and marrying a Swede along the way. He was at last sent back to face the consequences on July of 2001, and is currently serving a life term in prison without the possibility of parole. Anyhow, this was one of the founders of the first Earth Day. Yay. As I mentioned before, I remember this event quite well, and I'd like you to have you to listen to some of the dire predictions that were being sold as fact to people. Kind of like global warming today. As a matter of fact, back in 1970, we were told as a certainty that due to our pollution, we would soon be experiencing a coming ice age. There was even a big story about this in Time magazine and in Newsweek. You know, truth be told, there is a much higher probability of a coming ice age than there is for the pretty much now discredited theory of global warming. Anyhow, let's listen to some of the dire predictions presented as fact back then.
Yesterday was Earth Day, and yesterday I started to share with you some of the things that they've said about the environment over the years. Experts, doctors, scientists. I just want to give you this list. Listen to some of these dire warnings from 1970. First one, biologist George Wald, Harvard University, 1970. Civilization will end within 15 or 30 years unless immediate action is taken against problems facing mankind. Whew, we dodged that bullet. Senator Gaylord Nelson, quoting Dr. S. Dillon Ripley in Look magazine, April 1970, wrote, "By 1995, somewhere between 75 and 85% of all the species of living animals will be extinct." Do you remember when we used to have dogs? Ecologist Kenneth Watt, speaking at Swarthmore University, April 7, 1970. "The world will be 11 degrees colder in the year 2000. Brr, I wish we had that. It would help us with the global warming. This is about twice what it would take to put us in an ice age," he went on. Life magazine, January 1970, quote, "By 1985, air pollution will have reduced the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth by one half." Have you noticed how dark it is? Paul Ehrlich, the scientist and author of Population Bomb, wrote in April 1970, "In 1973, 200,000 Americans will die from air pollution. And by 1980, the life expectancy of Americans will be 42 years. Oh, my God. I'm kidding. I'm older than that. Earth Day organizer Dennis Hayes, spring 1970, he broke this news. "It's already too late to avoid mass starvation." Peter Guntner, a professor at North Texas State University, spring 1970, he wrote this: by the year 2000, the entire world, with the exception of Western Europe, North America, and Australia, will be in famine. Whew. Glad we live here.
A couple of these predictions that deserve to be repeated, and also there's one that wasn't on the audio file. The following prediction wasn't on the audio file, but it really deserves to be heard. Here's the quote. By the year 2000, if present trends continue, we'll be using up crude oil at such a rate that there won't be any more crude oil. You'll drive up to the pump and say, "Fill her up, buddy." And he'll say, "I'm very sorry, there isn't any." This is the ecologist Kenneth Watt. I love the title, ecologist. What the hell is that? Anyhow, now listen, I remember that prediction very well. I remember I lived then, as I told you, and the newspapers, magazines, television, and radio all reported it as if it were fact. Well, we are now 13 years beyond that point, and there is still plenty of oil and gas. Plus, new deposits are found all the time. Additionally, whereas back in 1970, we were able to only extract about 25% of the oil in any place where we found it, with today's technology, we can extract more than 65%, which means we're able to even reopen old closed wells. My point is that the blind sheep media tried to present this all as fact, and the sheeple followed suit. Sheeple. Have you ever heard that word? It's a cross between people and sheep. Okay, these are two predictions you just heard, but they deserve to be repeated. Quote, one theory assumes that the Earth's cloud cover will continue to thicken as more dust, fumes, and water vapor are belched into the atmosphere by industrial smokestacks and jet planes. Screened from the sun's heat, the planet will cool. The water vapor will fall and freeze, and a new ice age will be born. Here's another one. Quote, the world has been chilling sharply for about 20 years. If present trends continue, the world will be about 4 degrees colder for the global mean temperature in 1990, but 11 degrees colder in the year 2000. This is about twice what it would take to put us into an ice age. Again, our friend, the environmentalist Kenneth Watt. Okay, now what does this remind you of? Like maybe global warming, perhaps? Only the opposite was predicted. The term global warming and climate change were virtually unheard of before the year 1989. Do you think that suddenly this theory had been proved correct and become popular? Wrong. The theory had actually been around for more than 100 years by that time, and rightfully dismissed as quack science. Now, there was something in particular that happened in 1989 that required that this theory be shoved down our throats as fact. I'm not going to talk about that here today, but I do know. And so will you, if you give it some thought. So why the hard shift towards the environment in this particular podcast? Well, as a Westerner, it's easy, really all too easy, to question the blind and seemingly ignorant worship of Lenin, or Stalin for that matter, even to the point of deifying him, you know, by the Soviet masses. It actually seems very funny until I think about the environmentalists in the West. Environmentalism in the West is a religion, and one of their latest tenets of faith is global warming. Think about how they label those who disagree with them as deniers, global warming deniers. Think about this. This word is as close to the religious expression of heretics, as one can get. The media is their prophet, and the government jumps right in order to show the Western masses, and yes, you have now become masses in the purest communist sense. The government needs to have an enemy that they are needed to protect you from. In this case, it's the environment. Or more specifically, global warming. You know the drill. The seas are rising, the cities near the shores will be submerged, and some such crap about polar bears. I forget exactly what. I guess they're all drowning. Whatever. This religion goes after the children, which communists have always done, knowing that they can cram these little heads full of mush and that these will be the new apostles of their religion. So, I could go on forever about this, but not at this time. My point is to show how the pendulum is swinging the other way, and that we, from the West, really can't criticize those that blindly followed Lenin, Stalin, and Mao, as a certain loud, annoying part of our population destroys the economy and the very fabric of society in what was once a great and proud nation. I'm speaking about America. How far we have fallen when a lying POS like Obama can be elected not once, but twice. The expression holds true here. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. For many that participated in that very first Earth Day in 1970, their motives were good and pure. The desire to clean up the environment, to leave things cleaner for their children than what they had received from their parents. Unfortunately, the leaders of this movement did not have such pure motives and saw this all as a huge power grab. There's so much more I can say on this topic, but I'm not going to today. So, as we make fun of and apply labels like cult, and when I say we, I'm speaking from the West, we apply labels like cult of Lenin, I got all these air quotes going here, or cult of Stalin, and even now, cult of Putin. In America, though, meanwhile, yeah, more than 50% of Americans are not very intelligent and are members of the cult of Obama and the cult of global warming. From a distance, I see these changes quickly occurring, and I'm saddened and shocked at the suddenness and severity of the changes. George Carlin was a great American comedian who died in 2008. He was prone in his later years to make fun of the left, or liberals, of which he had always been part of, actually. As he grew older, he was able to more clearly see the folly of their ways. He was imitated by a whole generation of comedians and was found to be number 2 out of 100 of the greatest American stand-up comedians. I'd like to end this podcast by playing a little bit of George Carlin as he gives his opinion on Earth Day. I have to warn you, though, that his message is often strong. He likes to swear, but this is only to emphasize his message. Enjoy listening to George Carlin, and I'll see you again next week with the Mark and Russia broadcast. Well, listen to George Carlin now, but as far as from Mark, I say goodbye.
We're so self-important, so self-important. Everybody's going to save something now. Save the trees, save the bees, save the whales, save those snails. And the greatest arrogance of all, save the planet. What? Are these fucking people kidding me? Save the planet? We don't even know how to take care of ourselves yet. We haven't learned how to care for one another. We're going to save the fucking planet? I'm getting tired of that shit. Tired of that shit. I'm tired of fucking Earth Day. I'm tired of these self-righteous environmentalists, these white bourgeois liberals who think the only thing wrong with this country is there aren't enough bicycle paths. People trying to make the world safe for their Volvos. Besides, environmentalists don't give a shit about the planet. They don't care about the planet. Not in the abstract, they don't. Not in the abstract, they don't. You know what they're interested in? A clean place to live. Their own habitat. They're worried that someday in the future they might be personally inconvenienced. Narrow, unenlightened self-interest doesn't impress me. Besides, there is nothing wrong with the planet. Nothing wrong with the planet. The planet is fine. The people are fucked. Difference. Difference. The planet is fine. Compared to the people, the planet is doing great. Been here 4.5 billion years.